And that, my friends, is a snowy owl. There's an eruption of snowy owls in Wisconsin and other Great Lakes states right now. Have you seen one? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are going to talk about snowy owls and other birds that are gracing our landscape right now. And welcome your sightings at 1-800-642-1234 or your questions at talk@wpr.org. We will talk with two birding experts, and we'll welcome your questions and your observations. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us Andy Paulios, a Department of Natural Resources wildlife biologist stationed in Fitchburg and covering Dane County. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Joy.
And also Ryan Brady, a Wisconsin DNR research scientist who serves as the bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative. He is stationed out of Ashland, Wisconsin, on the shores of Lake Superior, and works on statewide bird programs and issues. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So, Ryan, what are you're seeing some snowy owls up there in the Ashland area, aren't you?
Yes, and that's not uncommon here, even in a non-eruption year. But this year, we've seen above average numbers, and the Shawamigan Bay area of Lake Superior is kind of a funnel, and it freezes over with ice prior to a lot of the other portions of the lake, and that serves as an inviting habitat for a roosting snowy owl because it very much mimics their tundra-like habitat that they're coming from.
What causes an eruption?
Well, you can get a couple different answers to that. The traditional thought is that the bird's primary prey source, which is a small rodent called a lemming, that those prey sources undergo population changes way up north in the Arctic. And when those lemmings crash in numbers, that forces the birds south to find food in places like southern Canada and the northern U.S. But the alternative idea is that just the opposite. In a year when there are a lot of lemmings, the snowy owls respond by successfully raising a lot of young owls. And when those young owls leave the nest, they have to go someplace, and the adults don't let them stick around up there, and they push all the young owls to the south. And that's when we see large numbers here. So we don't know exactly why with snowy owls. It could even be a combination of those two factors, but it's almost certainly related to the availability of their primary prey, which are these lemmings.
We thought our parents were tough, but I've been trying to see a snowy owl for a few years now, and I haven't had any luck. I was looking at different photos of what they look like. They can be that pure white and really hard to see against the snow, or some of them have black markings on them. The ones with the markings are younger or juveniles?
Yes. In general, there are exceptions, but in general, the younger birds are the most heavily marked. They can have quite a bit of dark barring. The females tend to have darker barring than the males. And then sometimes, not always, that they get whiter with age. So the older birds, especially the older males, can be very, very white. And this year we've actually had more sightings of those very white birds in the Midwest than we have in previous years. And those are just absolutely gorgeous. But some of the birds can throw you because if they have very heavy dark marking, they don't kind of pop as that white color you expect of a snowy owl. But that face is the place to look. The face will always be white regardless of the age or sex of the bird.
Well, I've noticed on some Facebook pages that the snowy owls, not only are we seeing them in Ashland, I saw Portage County, Marathon County, the Fond du Lac area, Racine, I think, even. And then I just saw a report that someone saw one in Dane County. And so I was looking around with my birder sister and her husband trying to find the Dane County snowy owl. And we didn't have any luck looking for it yesterday. Andy, have you had any luck seeing snowy owls this year?
Nope. I just get jealous reading all of everybody else's reports, too.
So, but we should, I mean, if there's an eruption, Andy, eventually, what does that mean? We'll all have a chance of seeing snowy owls at some point?
Yeah, I think Ryan had said there's more than 80 in the state right now that we know of. And of course, with Christmas counts and people getting out there and really sort of combing combing the open fields for birds in their count area will probably pick up quite a few more.
What tips do you have for me to finally see that snowy owl?
Yeah, it's kind of a challenge. It's the needle in the haystack birding. You know, you have to. They like their habitat in the winter is a lot like their habitat up in the tundra. They don't like forests. They like broad, open kind of expanses, either on the Lake Michigan shoreline or out in big agricultural fields and grasslands. And during the day, especially, you know, when it's really sunny, they tend to try to hunker down and get out of sight of any crows or anything else that kind of harass them. So you just drive around and look for white blobs, and then you have fun making a list of all the other white blobs that exist.
Yeah, I saw a lot of rocks with snow on them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we have a caller who saw a snowy owl. Jason in Appleton is with us. Hi, Jason.
Hey, good morning, Joey.
Where did you see your snowy owl?
Well, it was yesterday morning, Sunday morning, I was doing some flight training in the Appleton Airport, and it was the departure end of runway 30 at 9 a.m., and we were just turning the corner to do a run-up, and it took off right from the side, maybe 40 yards away, and it was pure white. I didn't see any darkness on it at all, and it made the day.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, I'm happy for you. There's something about the snowy owl. I don't know. I know, Ryan, you're an owl expert. Is there something, I don't know, magical about the snowy owl? Is there some sort of legend about the snowy owl?
Well, I think it's a combination of things, Joy. I think we're all kind of like birds of prey to some degree. The kind of predatory aspect of the bird makes it appealing to us. Owls, most of them are nocturnal, so they have kind of this intrigue or mystery to them. You know, they've got those front-facing eyes, unlike most of the other birds, so it's a little more human-like. It's almost like we can connect with them a little better as they're kind of looking right at us. Their movements tend to be a little slow and deliberate for the most part, and, you know, that's kind of a pace that we can catch up with, even if we're not an avid birder. And then when you throw in, you know, like a snowy owl, which is large, it's white, it's beautiful, it has bright yellow eyes, and it's often active during the daytime where we can see it. All those things kind of combine, I think, to just make them a very special bird that appeals probably more than any other bird to a vast cross-section of nature enthusiasts.
We talked to you last, Ryan, when the great gray owl was hanging out in the Madison area at a brewery of all places, and there was big crowds that showed up to watch this owl, and he kind of stayed in the same tree or the same vicinity for many, many days. I noticed that there's not a lot of specific locations for the snowy owls so much anymore. Do we want to avoid that kind of exodus of people, you know, rushing over there to see a particular snowy owl?
There are some concerns. It depends on the individual. Some folks aren't comfortable reporting the owls in case it may lead to some unethical behavior, which doesn't always happen, but sometimes it does, unfortunately. And some people aren't comfortable reporting them, so they don't. Other folks do report them and don't have any qualms about that. We should just use caution, you know, and use our best judgment. I think the most important thing for folks to remember is these birds are here in search of food. They're stressed from a very long trip south. And when they first get here early in the season, that's when they're most stressed because they're in a new, unfamiliar place. They've just flown hundreds, if not thousands, of miles to get here, and we need to really give them their space. Once they're here for a little while, they tend to do a little bit better as the season rolls on, and they tend to kind of find a territory to set up on.
And can does the snowy owl stay in a region like that great gray owl did last spring?
They will. These early birds that we're seeing, a lot of these are going to move through the state, or they're going to move around in the state trying to find those prey bases to set up a winter territory on. And so some of them are just moving through. A lot of them are probably just moving through now. As we get further into December here, and certainly by January, these birds will set up on winter territory, so a defined area that might be, you know, a square mile or smaller depending on the prey base, or bigger depending on the prey base. And then it may become easier for some folks to find them because there'll be these known locations. that they can kind of go see a staked out bird, if you will, that's somewhat reliable. With that said, there are hot spots, habitats and sites that attract these birds, you know, year in and year out. So those Lake Michigan points like Manitowoc and the Sheboygan Harbor, and down in Milwaukee, like the ferry terminal, those are places. Buena Vista Marsh, Horicon Marsh, the Superior Airport, Schwamingen Bay, like we talked about. And then recently, Crex Meadows has had a couple birds in that vicinity. So there are these places, you know, because they are good habitats, that even though it's not the same bird, you have a good chance of seeing them if you kind of visit repeatedly.
Well, I have some road trips ready for me. On my road trip yesterday, when I was looking for the snowy owl with my sister and her husband, we did see a few birds. I don't think they're necessarily rare, but I didn't hear, but I saw this guy. By the way, that's Bill Martin's playing some audio from the Bird Songs Bible, the complete illustrated reference for North American birds, and we'll play some more if people call in with the birds that they're seeing this winter. But that is a horned lark, and Andy, I take it that wasn't that unusual of a sighting?
No, we have horned larks are kind of interesting bird. They actually nest in Wisconsin. They're one of the few birds that like to nest in wide open bare dirt fields, so they really like big open cornfield soybean type landscapes. And in the winter, our birds, some of them hang around, and then we get a bunch from the prairies and all the way up into the Arctic. And you see them on the side of the road, especially after a big snowstorm or something, and they can't kind of get to the ground. And they're often with big flocks of Lapland longspurs, or if you're lucky, snow buntings too. So,
yeah, we didn't see snow buntings. I know that because my brother-in-law was looking for the snow bunting, but he knew that, and he showed me the picture of the. They actually have a little tuft or a little horn on the top of their head.
Yeah, I think the males kind of use them to make themselves look pretty for the females in the spring. But.
Well, so what else is? I guess another reason we wanted to talk about birds, not only because of the eruption of snowy owls, but that this is Christmas bird count time. And Andy, you say yours is not until later this week?
Yeah, I'm the one that I organize is on Wednesday. And a lot of people did theirs this Saturday and Sunday because it was kind of the opening weekend for Christmas bird count season. So I think Wisconsin has over 100 Christmas bird count circles. It's Wisconsin, as a sort of percentage of the population, we probably have some of the most avid birders and the most, probably the most engaged birding community, I would say, in volunteer monitoring programs like the Christmas Bird Count or the Breeding Bird Survey.
And what is the point of doing a Christmas Bird Count?
The Christmas Bird Count was started at the turn of the 20th century, so late 1800s, early 1900s. I think his name was Chapman. One of the early Audubon folks out east. And at that time, I think the story goes, a lot of birding was more collecting. So egg collectors, people would make collections of bird skins. And so you would actually go out birding with a small shotgun. And so when binoculars and optics were first sort of invented, he and others challenged folks, instead of going out and collecting birds, to go out and count them. And it's one of the longest running data sets that's fairly standardized across the country, and now it even goes down into Mexico, Central, South America. So over time you can get long-term sort of trends in bird distribution and abundance. So Audubon's done a good job of putting out a lot of different reports recently about how bird numbers have really changed and how distributions have changed with changes in climate or habitat or their response to sort of people, all that kind of stuff. So,
and Ryan, I read that you did conduct your Christmas bird count this weekend, and the numbers were down.
Well, they were down compared to last year.
Okay.
They were near average if you look at the 42-year history of the Ashland Christmas bird count. But last year was exceptional. As most people probably realize, it was a warm December season. It kept a lot of water open. There wasn't a lot of snow cover, and we also had this magnificent flight of what we call the winter finches out of the boreal forests of Canada. And pretty much everything was a reverse this year. We didn't have the boreal forest finches. We had heavy snow cover. We had cold and lots of ice and no open water. And we went from a record last year of 58 species on the Ashland Christmas bird count to a near average 34 species this year.
Okay, so this isn't below an average year, but it was certainly less than last year.
Correct.
Yeah. And anything outstanding, unusual?
On our particular Christmas count, we did not have anything exceptionally rare. We had three snowy owls, which for me is always a highlight.
Mm-hmm.
We had some robins, which some folks don't recognize as being kind of a midwinter bird in Wisconsin, but some of them do stick even all the way up north to Lake Superior. And a lot of American goldfinches. Goldfinches are pretty much above average in most locations across the state this year. They probably had a banner reproductive season, and that's kind of the dominant bird at folks' bird feeders right now in most places in Wisconsin.
The goldfinch?
Correct.
Yeah, I saw one yesterday, but it didn't look gold. They lose their color in the winter.
Yes, the young birds never really had the color, and there's a lot of those out there, so they're just kind of a brownish. And then the brighter female and then the brightest males, those all undergo what's called a molt, or they replace their feathers in the late summer, early fall, and then it's a drabber plumage in the wintertime. And then particularly the males, come late winter, early spring, they'll start to get these splotchy yellow patches as they replace those feathers again, and by early spring, mid-spring, they're looking like their bright, beautiful goldfinch plumage, ready to court the females again.
We better take our break and ask our listeners, have you been bird watching? Have you seen a snowy owl or another rare visitor? What recent sightings have you excited? What questions do you have about Christmas bird count, about winter birds, about snowy owls? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'd be happy, we'd be honored if you'd post a picture of a favorite bird, even, on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, name that bird call. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about winter birds in Wisconsin, and we're welcoming your questions and your sightings at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are happy to have with us Ryan Brady, a Wisconsin DNR research scientist who serves as the bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative. He is stationed in Ashland. And Andy Paulios, who is a Department of Natural Resources wildlife biologist stationed in Fitchburg, covering Dane County. So, Andy, you know what that bird was, don't you?
Yep, that's my favorite all red bird, northern cardinal.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite winter bird, just because it's just so striking, and I love to see the cardinal. I haven't seen as many blue jays. Is there something going on with the blue jay, as far as you know, Andy?
Well, that's actually a good bird. In terms of winter numbers, that the Christmas count does a really good job of tracking changes from year to year. And they can really bounce in numbers from year to year. And a lot of it tends to depend on the acorn crop in different landscapes. They're really good at tracking that sort of the different mast species, so acorns and hickory nuts and stuff. Because blue jays, if you watch them in the winter, if they're not your actual feeder, they're often bouncing around the neighborhood looking for acorns that they've cached and stashed, and or acorns that they can rob from squirrels and woodpeckers.
Very
and
good. I'm also looking forward to seeing some eagles. I do like to go to Prairie du Sac in that area in January for bald eagle days, and
yep.
And you don't have to go during that specific weekend. They're there most every weekend in January, because I think they like the open river, the Wisconsin River.
Right. Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of forage below the dam there, either fish or they'll even sort of hunt the waterfowl flocks for a straggler. But, and this should be, with all the ice we've had early, if you live down in southern Wisconsin, it should be a good eagle watching winter, because they should be awfully concentrated at open water patches. So
yeah, and there are lots of eagle watching type festivities going on.
Yeah, I think Bald Eagle Days in Prairie du Sac is in mid-January, so I think it's like the 17th and 18th this year. But, you know, they have Bald Eagle festivals now all over the upper Midwest, so I know they have one in Cassville on the Mississippi River. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's amazing how many eagles there are now, and you know, I'm even seeing them at my house, going over my house in Madison area in the winter. So it's definitely not something you have to go to a festival for to see, but the festivals have kind of fun programming and other stuff going on, too.
They are magnificent. We have full lines, so let's take some calls. Linnea in Washburn is with us. Hi, Linnea.
Hello. Well, I'm calling because I'm just fascinated by your subject. I was thrilled the other day to see a snowy owl in the marsh areas of Ashland.
Oh, lucky you.
Yes, but I did have a question. About 2 years ago, I was standing out on a rural road, on a dirt road, after sunset, and a owl, it was like a line drive. It went right towards my left eye, and it missed me by a couple inches, and of course it was completely quiet. And then it sat up in a tree and it looked at me, and I was wondering, do owls have aggressive behavior towards people?
Oh my goodness, you didn't have a bunny on your shoulder or anything, did you?
I'm not even blonde.
So. Oh, no. Well, Ryan, what do you think that owl was up to?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Generally, owls are not aggressive towards people, except if you were in a nesting area. Oh. And certainly if you were near a nesting area, there would be the possibility of a bird defending its territory, you know, and its nest site, just like it would against any other predator. But that, do we know the time of year on this sighting? I didn't catch that.
For the owl that dive-bombed you, Linnea.
Yeah, it was fall, and it was after sunset, and it was near my parents' house. It wasn't an area where they would be, a boreal forest area, where they wouldn't be nesting, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, that time of year, there shouldn't be any kind of really strong nest or territory defense. So that one is kind of mysterious to me. There's not really a good explanation that I can come up with, unless, Andy, you've got something.
I would guess it's probably a young bird that is really hungry and thought it saw something that was curious and was going to check it out, and then probably pulled up at the last minute, realizing it was a person.
So. Yeah. Thought, what in the heck? I'm not going to go after that. You know, I did hear that there are certainly other owls out there besides the snowy owl. I did hear some hooting going on in the middle of the night, because that's when I get up and that's when I come to work. And I'm guessing it was probably just probably the great horned owl, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, right now that's the sort of the common owl you'll hear calling. Great horned owls nest really, really early in the year. And in the Madison area, they're already getting pretty nesty by mid to late January, start laying eggs even in late January, early February. So right now they're doing a lot of territorial advertisement, and they're, the males and females stay on their territory, the adults, pretty much year-round around here. So he's probably telling, you know, various interlopers to stay away.
Yeah, I guess that the Odana Golf Course is his area. That's, I guess, what's going on. I think let's take a listen. Bill has that queued up. Well, it wasn't quite that barky. I don't know. It sounded a little smoother or softer than that, maybe just because it was far away.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a series of like five or seven hoots like that.
Yeah, very neat. And I did have a friend share with me a picture of an owl. She said, look, I think I found a snowy owl. And it wasn't a snowy owl. It was, I had to look it up. It was a barred owl. Ryan, it had brown markings on it.
Yeah, the barred owl is another kind of largish owl that we have. It's smaller than the great horn, though. It has dark eyes compared to the great horn's yellow eyes. It also lacks the ear tufts of a great horned owl. And it is kind of a mottled brown, kind of spotted on the back, more streaky on the front. And they're relatively common statewide, a little more uncommon in portions of the South. They're less likely to be found out in the rural country, like the Great Horns really like the kind of semi-open habitats. Bards tend to stick to the forested woodlots.
Janet in Monona is with us now. Hi, Janet.
Good morning.
Morning. What did you see?
Well, I was fortunate enough to see two large fields absolutely packed with the sandhill cranes. And that was the first Monday of December.
And where did you see this?
Back to Minneapolis, just south of the Dells, 94. It was on the right south side of the road.
Yeah, and kind of near the Crane Foundation, maybe.
Yeah, actually, I know that. I know exactly the field she's talking about, because those fields, especially in November and before freeze-up in December, tend to be full of cranes. I think most of those cranes are roosting on the Wisconsin River, where all the Leopold Foundation and the Pine Island Wildlife Area and stuff are. And it's a big, important bird area there along the lower Wisconsin Riverway. And so they roost, you know, thousands of cranes and lots of geese and ducks and all kinds of fun stuff.
Let's take a listen to a sandhill crane. All right, shut up already. No, I'm just kidding. So they're going to stay here this winter?
Well, most of them have probably left by now. Yeah. I'll say probably, because someone from the Alda Leopold Foundation will probably call and say they're still there. But, you know, cranes have, as they've increased, just like Canada geese, as long as they have some open water they can stand in to roost in, and they can find waste grain in the fields, a few of them will give it a go. And in last year, I know, in that really warm December, we had some cranes, you know, over Christmas, I think, that were still around. But usually the big exodus for cranes is around Thanksgiving time. And I know I was out one day after a front this year, and I think I counted like 6,500 cranes go over.
Wow.
You know, in one day in Dean County. So they're heading to Indiana, to the Jasper Pulaski Refuge, and from there some of them keep going further southeast. But a lot of cranes, especially the older breeding pairs, there's so much competition for their good territorial spots that they'll move back and forth to Wisconsin. And, you know, you'll even see some of the pairs come back in February when it thaws, and then they'll head back south. It's a lot of competition now for good spots.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call from Debbie in LaBelle. Hi, Debbie, or is it LaValle?
LaValle.
Okay, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you, if you want to see the eagles, we came home from Madison the other day, and it was, towards around 4:30 or so, and we were driving along, and up in one tree, there were four of them. Then you look down below by the island of the river, there was another three of them. So there was around at least seven or eight of them all in one. There were the four, and they were all mature ones. They all had the white heads, so
yeah,
they're all starting to come around in that by the river there.
I have to check that out. That's
I've ever seen in one tree.
Thank you very much. So yeah, they hunt together and congregate together, Andy.
Probably not by choice, but that's probably just a good spot for right now. The Madison Lakes, other than Mendota, they froze really fast and really hard. So the sections of the Ahar River that are still open, like below the Beltline there, are good spots to look. So
yeah, what else are we going to see by open water, Ryan? Is that where birds like to congregate, no matter what?
Well, open water is generally very attractive to a lot of different species, particularly because you can get so many different kinds of waterfowl. You know, there's 15, 20 plus species that you could see. You know, so you might get diving ducks like scaup or ringneck ducks or redheads or something, or you might get some of the dabbling ducks like a pintail and mallards and black ducks, goldeneye and bufflehead. You could get some geese. And so there's a lot of appeal there. And then those in turn serve as prey for some of our raptors, so things like eagles, so that tends to draw more in. And then you know, if you ever get these warm days, usually it's around water where there's, you know, there could be some you know, small bugs for the picking. So if you do have any insect-eating birds, there's a chance for them if they kind of get near some open water. Not to mention, a lot of birds like to drink and bathe during even the wintertime, believe it or not. So those can be attractive for a wider suite of species for that reason.
I'm not sure what region of the state it was, but it seemed like some birders were very excited by the sighting of a harlequin duck. Is that, do I have that name right, Ryan?
Yes, a harlequin duck, and that makes me very jealous every time I read about other people's reports, because we have a hard time finding those up here in Ashland. But they do occur most years along Lake Michigan. That's a bird that nests up in Canada, and most of them go to the Atlantic coast, particularly in New England. But every once in a while, one kind of comes through the Great Lakes, and you know, because you only have a handful of them each year, they're kind of highly sought after, especially if you get one inland away from Lake Michigan.
Well, look here. I didn't even see this. Cheryl in Fort Atkinson saw two of them. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi.
Where did you see the harlequins?
We saw them in Fort Atkinson on the Rock River.
Oh.
And it was for the Christmas bird count this weekend.
So you participated in the Christmas bird count for...
Yes, my husband and I do every year.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But that's an exciting sight. What else did you see?
Some of the folks saw a great blue heron yet hanging around. Some robins, bluebirds. My husband saw five bluebirds. And that's about it for anything really not here during the rest of the year, but... he was pretty excited about the ducks.
Yeah, so that is, Andy, are you jealous too?
Yeah, I mean, first off, Joy, I would, you know, earlier Ryan said that raptors were the coolest birds, but I have to say it's probably waterfowl. And if you've ever seen a male harlequin duck, it's a spectacular bird. And to find one inland in Jefferson County on the Christmas count is kind of like winning the lottery. So, Cheryl's obviously come down from her high from the weekend, but yeah, that would be a pretty good find.
I saw a photo of one on one of those sites, but I've never heard one. Let's hear what it sounds like, Bill. Aw, they sound cute.
Yeah, the ducks are not known for their vocal abilities, but harlequin ducks are... one of these coastal species that actually, they nest inland and often on these sort of faster moving rivers. They like to kind of hop up on these big boulders and kind of hang out. And so your best chance for seeing them often on Lake Michigan is to go to like the rocky breakwalls, like on the harbors and stuff. And they tend to sort of orient to those sort of habitats. But I think the ones in Fort Atkinson are hanging around with mallards or something. So it's very, very strange sighting, but...
We are talking about birds, winter birds, the Christmas bird counts that started this weekend in some areas of the state and continue this week and next weekend. Have you been on one? Do you plan to be on one? What are you seeing in your own backyard? What questions do you have about the birds that are gracing our landscape this winter in Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, name that bird call, bird song. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about winter birding in Wisconsin and welcoming your sightings, welcoming your questions for our two guests, Ryan Brady, who is a Wisconsin DNR research specialist who serves as the bird monitoring coordinator for the Wisconsin Bird Conservation Initiative. He is stationed in Ashland, and Andy Polios, who is with the DNR. He is a wildlife biologist stationed in Fitchburg, covering Dane County. And we're welcoming your questions for both of them. I think Bill in Galesville may know the song that I just played. Hello, Bill.
Hello, that sounded like a wren to me.
That was a wren, and in fact, it was what you think you saw.
Yes, that's the Carolina wren.
And when did you see that?
Oh, it's at my feeder here every day now, and I'm just wondering how rare it is. I look at the bird maps and I see it's a little, we're just a little bit north of its typical range, so I don't figure that it's that rare, but I'm pretty impressed, and I'm pretty excited about seeing it, and it looks like it's going to stick around through the winter. Is that possible?
Andy?
Yeah, I mean, we are, as Bill said, we're right on sort of the northern edge of the Carolina Wren Range. They tend to sort of increase in numbers after a couple of warm winters, so last winter was pretty warm for the most part until late in the spring, but we had quite a few Carolina Wrens around Madison earlier this year. It's probably a pretty rough start to the winter for most of the Carolina Wrens. They don't have these physiological adaptations to handle long stretches of cold weather. So on one sense, that makes them come to your feeders more often. So if Bill's got suet feeder out, they'll often come in and peck away at the suet feeder. I even met a lady once who had overwintering Carolina Wren. They're not really migratory, so it will try to stay for the winter, but she actually built a feeder that hung up onto her kitchen window, and it was enclosed like a tube so she could see it from the inside, and then she put a little heater in there, and she had him coming in there every day to eat like fresh mealworms or something like that. Aww. So it is a great song. I mean, it, you know, I'm always jealous of the folks down south where they're common, because it's a great song to have, like, in your garden or your backyard. But
very pretty, yeah. And it's
a pretty song. I have a suet feeder out, but I haven't seen it actually go to the suet feeder. I make a mix of peanut butter and black sunflower oil seeds. And that seems to be his preference. He really likes that mix. He goes to that all the time.
And what about some mealworms and a little heated shelter crumb, Bill?
Well, you know, I'm almost ready to go that far, I think, Joy.
That's really nice. That poor Carolina with that name, he's probably kind of chilly. But that's now. Do we want to, Ryan? Do we want to have what do I want to put out on my backyard feeding station to be nice to all my feathered friends? What do I want? Suet and peanut butter and what else?
Well, a good variety is always a plus because you'll attract a number of different species. Black oil sunflower seed is kind of the go-to one. That provides a very high fat content, which is good for wintering birds. And that's preferred by a lot of different species. So if you've got just one, that's usually the one to go with. Suet is a great idea. Also, you know, obviously fat for winter survival. Woodpeckers love it, but the chickadees do too, as will some other birds. Peanut butter is a high-fat food, and so that's why the wren's going for that as well. Thistle seed is another very good one. Thistle is a smaller seed. You need a special feeder for it. It's very attractive to the finches in particular. So if you've got the goldfinches around, you can keep them happy with thistle, although they'll also eat the black oil sunflower seed. And then you can also spread some millet and cracked corn around. Be careful, because that may bring in the blue jays and the grackles and the blackbirds and the squirrels, which you may not want. But it is a good food for some of the other species, the ground feeders like juncos and doves and other sparrows. So you can have a whole suite of species there.
Very neat. We have other callers, so let's go to Travis in Ashland. Hi, Travis.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you see?
So I was walking around Northland College campus, and I saw a pileated woodpecker.
Oh, yeah. Maybe since it's in Ashland, Ryan, you can handle that. The pileated, is that unusual?
Well, it's not unusual. Those are a winter bird here. They're a year-round resident, and their numbers seem to be doing pretty well. I've been seeing plenty of those around. They're big and noticeable, which makes it nice when you're driving down the road and you can easily see them when they fly across. They will come to feeders, not always, but occasionally they'll come to feeders, often suet, but occasionally to seed, and so that's a real big plus. But they're always such a spectacular bird with that big black body, really big red crest. A lot of people think of them kind of like Woody Woodpecker.
Let's take a listen to the pileated. Yeah, he's a loudmouth, too. You know, I think I did see the pileated then in in my brother-in-law's bird feeder because it was just ridiculous looking. There's these little birds all around this thing, and then this kind of looked like a monster head coming. You know, he's kind of from the back, but they were sharing with the pileated woodpecker. So he must have had something good in there for him.
Well, it's a good case example of kind of leaving, you know, dying wood standing out in your forested lots. We have a tendency to take down dead trees, but pileated, if you want to bring them in, leave those trees standing. It'll attract various grubs and insects that the woodpecker, not only the pileated, but the other woodpeckers will eat as well.
Well, let's, all right, let's go to Michael in Hillsboro. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My work has taken me for the last 30 years through the Portage area along the interstate where Highway 33 joins there. And there have been years when I've just seen thousands, if not tens of thousands, of geese, Canada geese. This year I was through there several times when I thought it would have been a migratory time. I hardly saw any. Is there anything going on there that you can specify?
Andy, do you know if there's an issue with Canada geese?
Not specifically about that spot. I mean, Canada goose numbers are really strong, really high, both the local breeders and then a lot of folks don't realize that a lot of our Canada geese that we see in the parks and stuff, but the main subspecies that we get in the fall migrating through nest all up on the Hudson Bay. So those numbers are really strong. We monitor those numbers every year with the biologists in Canada because they're heavily hunted, so we control the harvest amounts every year. I did notice a big difference this year in just where geese were roosting in the sort of outlying areas. Last year was a drought year, so a lot of the smaller wetlands were dry, and so they were a lot more concentrated. So last year he might have seen a lot more birds there because they were coming off the Wisconsin River, which, you know, has a more stable water flow. This year geese were spread out all over Wisconsin because there was so much water every place. So mm-hmm. It could have been.
Whatever happened to or what's going on with a species of bird, someone said kestrel numbers are way, way down from what they used to be. Do you know, Andy, if that's a problem?
Yeah, I mean, kestrel numbers, especially in the east, have really declined in eastern Canada. There's always more than one reason for everything, but a lot of that has to do with kestrels are an open grassland savanna bird, and we've just had a lot of changes to open landscapes. For one, the east, especially the northeast, has been largely reforested, and so a lot of the old farms at the turn of the 19th, 20th centuries are no longer farms. They're forest or they're cities. But we've changed our rural landscapes too, a lot less animal-based farming and more intensive crop farming, which isn't as good for kestrels. But there are some fun, exciting activities now for kestrels. Folks are doing more nest box programs for kestrels. Mm-hmm. They're a cavity nester. They nest in old dead trees. And you can actually register your nest box and monitor it as part of a larger initiative. And you can, if you just sort of search the Kestrel Partnership online, you probably find that. But and there are places that we have a lot of kestrels in Wisconsin. I know there's folks in the central Wisconsin area that do a lot of kestrel box monitoring. And if you go to the Prairie Chicken Festival in April, you can usually go out with them and capture a few kestrels and band them and watch that sort of activity.
Ryan, are there any other birds that we're concerned about, especially, you know, birds that call Wisconsin home for part or all of the time?
Yeah, during the winter time, you know, a lot of folks, one of the most common questions I get is about evening grosbeaks, mm-hmm. Particularly in the north. And folks remember as when they were younger, maybe 30, 40 years ago, as recently as 15, 20 years ago, used to see large flocks of grosbeaks, particularly in the north, but also all the way down in the southern Wisconsin. And that has not been the case recently, and folks always ask me why, and we don't have a good answer to that either. I wish I always did have good answers. But most people think that that one's related to a decline in spruce budworms. The budworm, there was an outbreak of these budworms back in the early and middle parts of the last century, and that really inflated the numbers of these grosbeaks because that's their food source. It allowed them to move farther to the east across the boreal forest, and those outbreaks have subsided now, and so it may be that the grosbeak populations are kind of returning to their more historical haunts, which included the more the western half of the continent in the U.S. and Canada. So that's one common one. And there are others, but that's one good example.
So take another caller, Ted in St. Germain. Hi, Ted.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have had a nesting pair of eagles on our property for 22 years. So I just had a couple of questions. Is it possible that that's the same mating pair? And then number two, we're pretty sure that 2-3 years they've had like two sets of twins. Actually, almost every year they have twins, but we think this year there was like two separate sets. Is that common or possible for mating eagles?
Ryan, do you want to try that one?
Yeah, I'll take the especially the first part there. 22 years is a long time for both of those mates to live. It's unlikely that they would both be able to live that long. It's possible that some eagles do live that long, but the chances of both of them, not real high, although it is possible. But when they lose one mate, you know, the other one will maintain the nest site, and then they'll look for another mate to attract there. And that's most likely what's going on, I think. As far as raising two sets of young within the same year, their nesting cycle is too long to do that unless they lost the first set. So if you saw the young when they were older and almost ready to leave the nest, there's no way they could have nested again and raised a second set. Usually I think you get two or three young bald eagles, and sometimes they fail, and sometimes they only raise one. So, Andy, I don't know if you have anything to add, but that's my thought.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. You have your Christmas bird count in central Wisconsin, Andy, coming up this week?
Yep.
You have to have already signed up to do this?
Actually, if you go to wsobirds.org, you can see that's the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology's webpage. You can see all the different Christmas bird count circles. You can also search for them on the Audubon, National Audubon page. And all the count coordinators' contact information are listed, so you can send them an email or give them a call. A lot of the counts, especially the outstate, more rural counts, are always looking for more help. Or if you live within the circle, you can sign up as a feeder watcher, so you can provide some information about what birds are in your backyard or coming in your feeder. And that's often a good way to find different stuff like Bill's Carolina Wren or maybe a varied thrush or something like that.
Yeah.
So
we'll give Ryan last not even 30 seconds, just some last-minute tips for people in terms of winter bird watching.
You got to be out there to see stuff. So take a drive, go see what you're looking for, you know, and go out in that last hour of light if you want to try and find a snowy owl. That can be a good time when they start to actively hunt. I would also add, put a poll on your Facebook page, Joy, and ask people what is cooler, ducks or owls.
I am going to.
And we'll see who wins that battle.
Thank you both very much for being with us. And thanks to Marika Saval and to Bill Martins for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.